sings through me. The song of the world sings through me now. I am the heart of the
of spirit. However it works, you're not alone as you're there. And as you move around through this place, you see some other people. You see someone you know, someone that maybe you love, is a close friend. And you'll notice that they too are with someone, the great mystery. Spirit has their arms around them, baby. And take a minute, look at them, see them, really feel their presence. And then look at them and say, I love you. And then move on with the arms of spirit and the great mystery around you. Until you see someone else, or maybe something else, something that's been difficult, or someone that has been difficult, something that you're dealing with, an issue, another person, and look at them, and look at their presence, and notice that they're not alone either, that they are also in the arms of spirit. And feel their presence, feel their energy. And then look into them and say, I love you. And then move on. move around, look at the place where you are. Look how it feeds you, how it supports you possibly, how you feel the Spirit, the great Spirit when you're there, and the great mystery flows out of it to you. Feel that. Look around and feel all of that. And say, I love you. And then move on a little farther, still in the arms of Spirit. And you see someone sitting, and you walk over to them, and you see that they too are in the arms of Spirit, and the great mystery surrounds them. And look into their eyes, and realize you are looking at you. Feel that presence. Feel that Spirit, that energy. Feel their presence as you're there with them. And then look into their eyes, into your eyes, and say, I love you. Then move on and relax in the presence of this wonderful place where you are, in the presence of Spirit, in the presence of the great mystery. Now bring yourself back to this room. And thank you. Thank you, Spirit. Amen.
So,
Welcome. Glad to see you all here. I see a lot of old friends. Hi, Steve. And I'm going to talk about you in a little bit. James asked me a few weeks ago if I would speak today because he said he wants to have one of the old members speak. Oh, thank you, Sina. But I see some that have, but I'm assuming he means my membership is old, yeah. Really. And I see some other old memberships out here also. So it's kind of neat to be here, a lot of fun. back when I first joined, back in 1968, in January in 1968, we were meeting in the Little Red Chapel down by the NIC campus across Hubbard Street, I believe, from the NIC campus. And Reverend Steve Tolles was the first president of the board, I understand. And I have a story that I've heard about him, and I've never verified it with him. And if it's not right, I don't want to hear about it because I like the story a lot. But Steve had an insurance business here in town at the time, and when they had the first meeting, or one of the very early meetings, and decided to go through the incorporation process and apply with Unity Worldwide Ministries to become a Unity Church, he left his office, his insurance office, and his men did back then in the early 80s, maybe late 70s. He was wearing a suit. And he walked into the meeting, and someone, they were talking about the board, who's going to be on the board, and someone said, well, he looks like a president. So he became president of the board. And don't correct me if that's not right. I like that story a lot, just like that. The first thing that I volunteered for when I started with this church, and actually it was 85, I became a member in 86, and I'd been attending for several months before, but they had just bought this 5-acre property here when I joined, it was part of, they bought it from the Hoffman estate, which had been the Hoffman cattle ranch before that. And at that time, Hoffman Street ran from 4th Street down this way about 2 blocks. And then from there was just a track through the field is all. It was not a dedicated road at all. 15th Street didn't have curbs or sidewalks or anything like that. So we needed to fence this 5 acres. So that was my first volunteer project with, at that time it was Unity Church of North Idaho, was fencing this 5 acres to keep the cattle out. So I have, so to try to tie it all together and tie who I am and so on, I brought a couple things that I written over the years, that are kind of hopefully my own kind of way of tying our history, the history of the blended churches and everything back into this day and this minute right here, right now. And so the first one that I'm going to be, these are all both pretty short. The first one is breath is a gift of nature. And sometimes when I'm writing, it's not unusual for me to feel the words like they're flowing through me. Almost like I'm breathing the words and feeling that spiritual energy, that universal energy of in and out flowing through me, through the universal energy, the mystery, the force, whatever works. And so I start thinking in terms of my breathing, of the in and out, and so on. In many traditions, spirit means breath or wind. Our word for spirit is derived from the Latin spiritus, which means breath. For Greek, spirit is also known as pneuma, and it's a term which also means breath. In Hebrew, the word ruah, I believe it's pronounced, R-U-A-H, is synonymous with wind, and Yahweh is derived from the root H-W-Y, I believe it's still pronounced Yahweh, which also means wind. And it says that at Pentecost, the sound came from heaven like the rush of a mighty wind. So, like the wind, the mystery can be heard, but not necessarily seen. And it's constantly speaking to us and through us in so many ways. So how many times have you said or heard someone say they just had an aha moment? An aha, an inspiration. Aha really isn't a word. It's really a breath. It's an inspiration. Or if you misspell it, something I'm real good at doing, an inspiration. So here's where I'm going to get weird with you for a little while, okay? But I love this stuff. Astronomer Harlow Shapley calculated that with each breath we take and exhale contains 30 quintillion atoms of argon. So 30 quintillion, that's 30 with 18 zeros. And each breath we breathe out, and that's just one element. That's just argon. So, but argon is a heavy gas, and the atoms remain close to the Earth and floating around close to the surface and don't dissipate out into space very far. So they're throughout the neighborhood here in a few hours, and in a week or so, they're across the country, and in about a month, they're all the way around the Earth. So to make this personal, last week, James was telling us that his granddaughter had been born, I believe, in Seattle, Reverend James. His granddaughter had been born, I believe, I think it was in Seattle. And about 3 weeks before. So some of that baby's, Emma maybe, some of that baby's first breath, the atoms from that baby's first breath are with us in this room now. I love that kind of stuff. And to take it the other way, and actually in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be needing some of the atoms from this room as I'm hiking the Highland Trails of Iceland. And they'll be there too. So that kind of gives us an idea about how we're really connected all the way around the world, always have been. So with each breath we take, about 400,000 argon atoms, we breathe in about 400,000 argon atoms that Gandhi, Buddha, Jesus, or Hitler had breathed in their lifetimes also. So that takes us back to where we are, to our very beginning. In other words, each human breath samples the snorts, the sighs, the bellows, the shrieks, the cheers, and the spoken prayers from prehistory through our historic past, and it likewise contributes to our collective future. So we're all, it's all one big piece. Our at-one-ment, which is sometimes used, a term sometimes used around this, with our earthly habitat is such that each breath we visit our entire past and we connect to our collective future with each breath we take. So I brought a piece, another piece, and I thought when I started writing it that it was going to be about a hike I took in the Wyoming wilderness, the Jim Bridger wilderness, into the Wind River Range, and I had been in there, and I came out, and I thought I was going to write this because I had a deadline to write about the trail, about the hiking, the photography, and I ended up writing about breathing. It's funny how that works. So anyway, with the trailhead at over 9,500 feet, so just to put that in perspective, my Apple Watch says we're at 2,242 feet right here. You're a foot lower. So I don't know how accurate these are. So the trailhead was at 9,500 feet, and breathing was a bit taxing. I constantly felt about the same as I do when I've just run the steps at home about three times. Not really out of breath, but needing a little oxygen supply for the intake. And to prepare for the hike, we had been camping for a week or so at 7,000 and 8,000 feet and hiking up into the tens, day hiking up into the tens to get ready for this hike. And the week before I left to start on the trip altogether, I'd gone up into the Canadian Selkirks, beautiful place up there, and was hiking around up there between 7,000 and 8,000 feet. And I was hiking the ridges, walking the narrow ridges from peak to peak up there, taxing my lungs and my legs as I went. And it had given me wonderful views of the deep, narrow valleys around, and in some the shaded areas below never quite melts off the snow completely. So with all that preparation, I felt I had all the confidence I needed and my lungs were going to be in good shape. So after a couple nights at the trailhead, I felt ready to head out on our seven-day trip, seven-day hike into the wilderness. At about 4 miles on the first day, we had gained about 1,000 feet of elevation. Not horrible, but quite a bit at that elevation. Anyway, we gained about 1,000 feet, and we stopped for a rest at a place called, with good reason, called Photographer's Point. And I was feeling rather oxygen-deprived, as you might think, but I was doing fine. And then the sights, they took my breath away. Several gray, stony spires pierced the sky, still gripping against the forces of time snippets of ancient glaciers. It was awe-inspiring to look into the valley bottoms at less than 7,000 feet, up to the tops of those spires at 13,500 feet, some of them, and more. And while standing and looking, I noticed my breathing, which I usually take for granted. But at that altitude, it was ever present in my consciousness. And I couldn't help but remember a quote from my friend Christina Baldwin, when she said, "And what is breath?" I just love this. "What is breath? Nature. Nature's gift. The exhalation of trees." Nature's gift. The exhalation of trees. Made me jealous when I heard that. There would be several breaks during that week, both to draw in the precious views of nature and to draw in the precious gift of nature, breath. Our teachers, and we teach it ourselves too, teach others to breathe whenever the stresses of life seem to be appearing and getting difficult. It's the very act of conscious breathing that centers us back into spirit. Often, we think that breath and spirit are the same. And for many people, life begins with the first breath. In the book of Job, the Spirit of God has made me, and the breath of the Almighty gives me life. So spirit breathes us, while breath creates life all around us. More than anything else, it connects us to all the rest. We share it with everything, the plants, the animals, even the earth itself. Its very essence is more than the sum of the parts. In fact, it is the mystery. No living organism can last more than a few seconds without it. So back in the wilderness in Wyoming, the awareness of breathing was ever present. And as I moved on, I hiked deep into the valley streams, crossing, and the awareness was always there. Hiked up over saddles and through gaps, and the awareness was there. Then to the tree line and beyond, and the awareness was still there. I was feeling my lungs always asking for just a little more, but never suffered any real symptoms of altitude sickness. One morning when we woke up, there was frost on the tent that I was in and on the vegetation all around. And when I crawled out of the tent, I could see my breath, and I could see the breath of my hiking mates also sitting out there. And all three of us, our breath joined together and joined over the mist, over the lake. And we all breathed into the one. We all became one at that point. Now, granted, to be in the mountain wilderness, in its silence and in its darkness, gave me pause enough to explore my humanness and my connection to spirit and the universal love. But then that love screams through that silence and shines through that darkness. Coming out of the mountains, the recovery was immediate. Still, the lesson stayed with me, as you can tell. You're getting it now. and it impressed me forever, and it's still there. The trip turned out to be a week-long exercise in conscious breathing. Having that consciousness in my mind, I started listening to it more, trying to understand the lessons. It connected me to my inner self and spirit within. Just by being aware of something as rudimental as breathing, I started listening to what else was talking to me. So what I'm really talking about here, let's see if I can tie this together now. What I'm really talking about here is our connection to all. Today, historically, and in the future. So getting back to the Little Red Church, which I think I'm supposed to be talking about, or part of it, anyway, we met down there, and that church was really cute. But it didn't work. At that time, you had to go outside and down some cellar steps to the one bathroom, and there was a permanent sign down there that said, please leave the water running so it doesn't freeze. And now there's they've built a restroom building beside it. But at that time, that's what we had. And it, like I say, the main floor had two rooms. One was a room considered probably half the size of this room, which is where we met on Sunday mornings. And then there was another room that was probably half the size of Geraldine's office, which was everything else. We rented office space over at Harbor Plaza over on Northwest Boulevard, and that's where Sunday school was too. So people had to drop their kids off at Sunday school, then drive over to NIC basically, and then leave right away and drive back to pick up their kids. For any larger events, any bigger events that we had going, which a lot of times were fundraisers, we'd have to either go outside. We came over to this property a few times because we owned it. And we paid for it within a year after we bought it, had it paid for. Or we would rent oftentimes a Grange Hall or something like that. And nearly all of those events were to serve the building committee, to build this building. Now, I understand at the same time, and I'm not sure when it started, but the Church of Truth was meeting in their building down on, what street is that on? Down?
Sixth and Garden,
yeah. And they were meeting there, and I think that church, I think, may have started before this one did. I'm not sure. But anyway, they were meeting at the same time down there. So just like a tradition that we started then and are still maintaining quite well was all of the events, all of our functions included food, music, sometimes dance. I remember one, and they all were intended to raise money to serve this, to build this building eventually. One of those, which included food, and we had a chili cook-off. And this fit my personality perfectly because everybody brought their favorite recipe of chili. And beside your pot of chili, you would put like a gallon glass jar, okay? And people would buy a ticket for $1, and that's how they voted on the best chili when it came in. You could buy as many tickets as you wanted. You could vote as many times as you wanted. You see where this is going? So you bring your chili in, you buy $100 worth of tickets, put it in your jar, you know, maybe take a handful out of somebody else's jar. A little graft, you know. We had a lot of fun with it. If I remember correctly, one time it was, believe it or not, a vegetarian chili that won. Right. So we had fun with that. We also had a kiss a pig event where for $10 you could kiss a pig that we had there.
And was the pig cute?
Yeah. Not as cute as you. But, but anyway, so anyway, if that doesn't sound like a lot of fun, you could take that $10, or I could take that $10 and buy Jim Sullenberger's chance to kiss a pig. That's when it got fun. That's when it got fun. Everyone was watching their back. It was a good time. We had a good time with that. So when we were getting ready to build this place, we were still having fun. We were also a strong spiritual community. And you think about all of those events, you think about that church down there, you think about the Church of Truth down on 6th and Garden, and those argon atoms I was talking about earlier, they were being breathed there. And they're here in this same room now, all these years later. So that takes another connection to our history, a real physical connection. In 95, I was asked to join the board, 1995. I was asked to join the board because someone had resigned from the board and they needed to fill that position for the rest of that term. So I agreed to do it and then ran again afterward. But when I got the phone call asking me if I would serve on the board and fill out that position, they said that the board is made up of all women with one man, and they wanted another man. So I was a DEI hire. So get another man on the board there. So we finally got started on the building, on this building here, and what happened was they came to us and said that we were going to lose our conditional use permit for this building, for this lot, if we didn't get started on a building. I mean, it had been 10 years at that point. And so we decided that we would start with this, and this was one wing of that original plan. And who knows if it'll all get done or not, but this is working for now. But this is one wing. This was the education wing. This room that we're in was designed to be, I think, 6 classrooms with a hallway down the middle, divided into 6. And then this triangle up here was going to be a prayer chapel, just a quiet prayer chapel. So that's what we built. The rest of the plan was straight away from this one going over that way. It was a fellowship hall, which included a full kitchen and everything. In fact, there was even talk of a commercial kitchen. And then teeing off of that between the two wings was the main sanctuary. It seems like that main sanctuary was originally planned between 500 and 600 seats. Which this was back in the 90s, and I was thinking, and a lot of us were thinking at that time, that there was not a really good auditorium or service place in town that was that size. It was before the Kroc Center was open. There was the Lake City Playhouse down on Garden Avenue that holds about 200, and then there was the NIC Auditorium. It holds about 1,200, and there was really nothing in between. So part of the thinking was that this could also be an event center. We could have concerts and even plays and things like that in that facility. So that was kind of what fed the size of it as we got started on it. But we finally got this done in 97 and moved in 97. I believe it was Mother's Day, wasn't it? Do you remember? I think it was Mother's Day of 1997 that we dedicated the building. And so a lot of people that are here now, some of the people that are here now were here then, and were bringing in their energy and those argon atoms from all over the place and starting the connection that was going to be the future of this place, this facility. So the ministers that we've had since I've been involved, and Steve might be able to help me on this, the first one that I know of for sure was David and Alice Dirksen, who...
No, just Alice.
What?
Just Alice.
Oh, just Alice? Okay. And they were in Spokane, right? And so Alice was coming over and serving as a minister here. And was there anyone between Alice and Marilyn, do you remember?
Julie Keen?
And Chuck Hancock? Okay. And I don't know those people at all. And I don't know who was the minister at the Church of Truth at that time.
Dennis.
Who?
No, it was his.
Yeah. Anyway, they were meeting there in their building at the same time that we were doing here. So then, when I became involved, Marilyn Muehlbach was the minister here. And she retired in, I think, 2005 or 6, along in there. I know that in 2004, she married Linda and I. And it was after that. So that's the date I've got set in my mind. And then we brought in Barry Vernard as an interim minister, who signed a one-year contract and said that it would not be renewed. And he came in intending to work us through this transition because by that time, Marilyn had been here for 20 years, or around 20 years. And he worked with us several meetings every week, working us through. One thing he taught us that really stayed with me was, and I don't think this is too uncommon when a minister is in the same place for a long time, and this certainly isn't Marilyn's fault at all, but a lot of us, myself included, kind of looked at this as Marilyn's church. And what Barry Vernard started unteaching right away was this was not Marilyn's church, it was our church, all of us who are attending here, which was a pretty interesting concept. And so he worked us through that. He also pointed out that probably in the future, there's a good chance that in 20 years, we'll have gone through four or maybe more ministers, which seemed to be the trend at the time. So after Barry's 1 year here, John Considine came in, and John was here for a couple of years with us, and then just needed to move on wanted to get back to Detroit, where he had family and so on. So he went back to Detroit, and then Deidre Ashmore was hired first as an interim. She was working as the assistant minister at the Spokane Church in the South Hill. And she was hired first as an interim minister, and then we hired her as the permanent senior minister, after several months, maybe a year, something like that. And so she was with us for about 9 years until she retired. And then Michael Moran and his partner Gaia, they served us as interims for a little over a year. Michael did all the Sunday talks and a lot of the ministerial work, and Gaia did like events coordination and a lot of other work around, and occasionally spoke too. And so they were with us for a year, I think, about a year. And that's when we hired Steve and brought Steve in, who had been a Unity minister for several years at that point, and all around the West, at least, I believe. So that's when we brought Steve in. Now, I have a fun story, a unique story, about Steve and Deidre, because Steve and Deidre were classmates from kindergarten through high school in Wallace, in Kellogg. And Deidre's dad was an officer in the mines up there or something, and Steve's dad was a judge up there, so they'd been up there. Neither one of them knew anything about what a Unity was, raised in various different faith systems altogether than Unity. And then Steve went off to college, came back, like I said, had an insurance business, and then decided to go to Unity Village and become ordained as a minister. Deidre went off to college and then was in San Francisco for a while during 1968, the Summer of Love. we teased her about it. And then she was over and on the Washington coast, north of Seattle, for several years before she went back to Unity Village and became ordained and then was working in Spokane before she came over. I just find it really interesting that two people from the town the size of Kellogg both became Unity ministers and both served in this church also. And so while Steve was here, we sold off 1 acre out here, and there's two houses out there now. This was kind of, this worked out real well for us. It added to our success, I think, a great deal, because I'm from my family are all agribusiness people, and we used to joke all the time. The standard joke, in fact, is that farmers are land rich and cash poor. And that's pretty much what we were. We had a piece of property here that was really growing in value a great deal, and our cash flow was sketchy most of the time. And that changed that. So we sold that off, and that helped a great deal. And then Steve was here 5 years?
Three years, excuse me.
Okay. And then retired, and that's when Dennis Ashley, who was at that time the minister at the Church of Truth down on 6th Street, and they had sold that building because they were having the same issues with that building that we had when we were down at the Little Red Chapel, except they owned their building and we were renting that chapel down there. But they were coming up against a bunch of upgrades that needed. It was a 100-year-old building. And a bunch of upgrades that needed to be made, and those upgrades then all had to bring everything up to the current codes, and it was probably more than unaffordable. It was pretty much impossible with that facility. So they had sold that property and was meeting in storefronts and things like that. And so that is when we blended the two communities together here in this building, and Dennis Ashley became the minister here at that time. And so that's kind of, and Dennis was here for 2 or 3 years, and that's when he retired, and then James Kress we hired last October. So that kind of brings us up to date on ministers. And then there's been a lot of board members around, and I was wondering if all the current board members from here would stand up so we can see you. Here's Audrey, and Dave. Yeah, thank you. Thank you all. Mm-hmm. Two men, you'll notice. So now, why don't you guys stand back up again for a minute, would you? Now, would all of the former board members from both Unity Spiritual Center of North Idaho and the Church of Truth, would you all stand too? There's Peter and Andrea and Nancy, and look at all this. So, Steve, so these are the shoulders that we stand on, folks. These are the people that that created the foundation for this group. And their atoms are still here too, obviously, thank goodness. You hope? Yeah, that's a good... So when we've also spread our energy out literally around the world, and I don't know if I have all the names correct with me, but we have produced a lot of ministers out of this spiritual community, starting with Steve. Steve went back and got ordained, and then Richard and Chris Broderhausen left 30-some years ago and became ordained and then started the Unity North Church in Spokane, and they just retired within the last 4 or 5 years, I think. Rich Carlini was here, a board member and an active member, got ordained, and he worked in several different places, both in and out of active ministry, but ministry-type positions for several years, and I've lost track of him. I don't know if he's still working or not. What?
I think he's at a Unity Church in Oregon.
Oh, is he? He's still at a church in Oregon. Good. Mm-hmm. Kathleen McKenna was a member of this church. In fact, she was a choir director here at one point, and at one choir rehearsal, she announced that she had just been accepted into Unity School for to become ordained as a minister. And she worked in, she's living in Seattle now, I think, isn't she? Or is she still in Ohio? Okay, and I know she worked in Ohio for, has had a church in Ohio for several years, too. Is she still ministering, do you know?
She's retired.
Okay. She was a friend of yours. Didn't you guys kind of come together?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. And then we, Jean DeBarbarese, I don't know if anyone knows, remembers her. Of course, yeah. Jean worked for the city. She was in the city planning office. She was an architect herself, is an architect. And she became ordained and had a church in Florida, I think. What?
Tallahassee.
Yeah, in Tallahassee. Yeah, I think in Tallahassee, Florida. And she just retired within the last couple of years from down there. So there's, I think there's some more, but I don't remember who else we've produced from here. Plus
also,
we've
the Alliance of Divine Love has ordained 5 ministers from our congregation.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Who are those? Do you know? Carolyn, for one.
Well,
David.
Mark Snyder.
Mark Wilson.
Amber.
Yeah. Okay, Amber Burr. And so we have spread this energy out literally around the world with teachers.
We have another one in class right now.
Do we? And Susie Hicks is in class right now. That's right. I knew that. And so that's another way that we have spread our energy out. The two communities now blended together have spread the energy out. Does anyone know, has any ministers come out of the Church of Truth, that anyone from the Church of Truth became a minister? I don't know of any. I was only in that building once or maybe twice, so I'm not real sure. But they were there for a long time, I know that. So then, some other things that we have offered to the community, and I think has been good for the community, is both here and down at NIC, the AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, has met in these buildings and does meet in this building. Actually, AA, indirectly, AA is the reason I got involved, ultimately, back in 85. A dear friend came home one time and said, came home from an AA meeting and said, you know, they're doing something down there at that church that I think you'd really like. But they said they're doing the Bill Moyer and Joseph Campbell series, The Power of Myth. And I was a Joseph Campbell fan. I loved that stuff. I love mythology and philosophy and all of that. So I ended up going down there, but I was only going to go down there on Wednesday. I sure is not going to get involved with anything for the next 40 some years, that's for sure. That's for sure. So AA has met with us for years. We have sponsored, we've been a pickup place for the food bank. We've been a pickup place for Coats for Kids. We've been active with Family Promise for many years. We've been active with Turkeys and More for many, many years. We are a member and have tithed over the years to Unity Worldwide Ministries and the Unity Northwest Region. And in fact, we've provided officers to both of those. Weren't you an officer in the region once, Steve, for a while? Yeah. And Marilyn was on the board and, in fact, president of Unity Worldwide Ministries for a while years ago also. So we have sent our energy into all of these other spots, you know. Some other things that we've done is we've had a booth at the Pride in the Park for several years, or we did have a booth at the Pride in the Park for several years. And we used to do a float for the 4th of July parade, which was fun with lots of music and so on. So as I was working about with this, I'm one of the favorite things I do here now is my Wednesday mornings with the God and Coffee group. And there's a few of us here. and a few weeks ago, Deborah brought in, and I believe this is a book also, isn't it, Deborah? Yeah. And it's Ubuntu. Is that the correct? Is that how I pronounce that? And it's Southern Africa language. And it means, I am me because we are us. And it just feels like this group to me. It really does. I'm very comfortable with that. So, I just got my wood all cut and put away for the next winter. And so I've got a joke that I'm going to wrap this up with. There was this old guy that was out chopping wood. And a young fella came walking down the lane and stopped and was looking at him. And the old guy said, yeah, what do you need? And the young guy says, well, I was looking at that axe. That looks like a really nice axe. The old guy said, you know, this axe is over 50 years old. And the young guy said, wow, look at that. There's still varnish on the handle. There's even a label on the head from the hardware store. And the old guy said, well, in 50 years, I've gone through 4 heads and 6 handles. And it kind of reminds me of us. We are the same, and we are changing and different, too, at the same time. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ernie. That was wonderful, all that talk about the argon molecules and the air we breathe. And as we look out now, we can see that this air is filled with some other stuff right now. Lots of emotions in that air as well. So I like to think right now, we haven't had rain for a while, so I'm going to sing a song about water.